through beans up there. It's all or nothing. It's elimination or glory. Arsenis takes Trubin! Mourinho magic! The goalkeeper plants his header beyond one of the best stoppers in the business. And Benfica are heading for the playoffs.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Tara DeFallon.
Hello.
Yes, here to talk about football. Yeah, last week we decided that maybe football was something we would approach a bit more obliquely. But this week, our teams have done a little bit better, and so we're feeling more comfortable about talking about football, aren't we, Terry?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I feel a lot more comfortable having, yes, done a little bit better. I'm not sure about Jan because his team has yet to play. But in a way, that is better than what happened last week.
Well, indeed. Yeah, we're recording on Monday evening, as usual. Early Monday evening, we're in the last hour at the moment of the transfer window. So there could be all manner of excitement going on outside of our little closed world of podcast recording. And then, Jan, you've got Sunderland playing at 8 o'clock. So you've got a busy evening ahead of you after this podcast, haven't you?
I have indeed, yes. Yeah, so hopefully we'll get back to winning ways. We're at home against Burnley, and we haven't lost at home all season. So the mere fact that I've just said that means that this is when, yeah, exactly, Grim's holding his hands up, which is exactly what I'll be doing come 10 o'clock tonight. Now, because I think that we're going to probably win this game, means also that, I mean, you just shouldn't tempt the football god, should you?
Nope.
No, we're going to get beaten. We're going to lose. It's going to be terrible. It'll be the first home defeat, back-to-back defeats as well after West Ham. So, not looking forward to it at all.
No. There were some great games this weekend, though. Our box set was full of cracking games. Subscribers will know this because they'll have looked through those games. They may have watched a couple of them. And if you watch the Saturday games, they were amazing. All three of them. The lead changed. So every result there was basically a turnaround. There were some fantastic results. And I think maybe people had got in the mood for some last-minute hijinks after the Champions League. Because, Terry, last week we were saying that the people aren't that satisfied with the mega table. And there were a lot of columnists who were sticking with their "I find the mega table a bit boring" opinions. Even after last Wednesday produced some of the greatest drama that the group stage of the Champions League has ever produced.
Yeah, I think it is actually a vindication of the mega table. One commentator who doesn't like the mega table was saying, is it worth it for just that one round of fixtures? Which I thought, well, look, everybody is playing seven fixtures before they get to this. That is a reasonable amount of fixtures for everyone to play so that you have a good shakedown of who the best and who the worst is. So you get a good idea of who the good teams are, who the not the middle-ranked teams are, and who the rubbish teams are. And then you have this massive single-night extravaganza where everybody plays everyone, you know, not, I was about to say, where everyone plays everyone at once. That would be amazing, but I don't believe that the as flexible as the laws of the beautiful games are, I don't think that they're that flexible, where everything happens at the same time. And I think that if you are going to do it like this, then this is the right balance. I could make the argument and say, well, you know, wouldn't it be good if they just played this one round of fixture and that was the decider? But that's ridiculous because of goal difference and all of that stupidness. I mean, like, you need to have a modest number of games, but if you're going to have that many people in there to shake things out, set things up for this climax, this finale. And actually, for the first time, I think, in a while, I was able to look upon this and see the sporting merit in having this table, because I'd always really been informed by much about the necessity of having a large table with lots and lots of teams in it because this was what was wanted commercially, and not thinking too much about the sporting aspects of it. But then I thought, well, you know, we have a 7-game run, and then basically you don't have to watch those 7 games. You don't have to get involved. Just wait till the 8th game and then just start watching it from there. Which forms in nicely to the whole premise that before Christmas, the Champions League is preliminaries, and it starts to get going after Christmas, where historically, which is when the knockout stages are, but in fact, there's one more or two more rounds, isn't there, of regular season play. So just ignore those first 7 games, unless you've got a dog in the race, fair enough. But otherwise, watch some Championship on Sky or something like that, and then get stuck in, because that was just impeccable football. And we have one of the great old stages of football to thank for much of it, don't we?
We certainly do, certainly do. Some people, Jan, might think that Jose Mourinho is the forgotten man of European football. Has been. Someone who has returned home to retire. There he is. He's gone back to Portugal, where he's obviously fated. And just seeing out his years at Benfica, he's never, ever going to cause an upset again, is he? Is he? Is he?
Well, no, not when they're playing at home to one of the best teams in the world, Real Madrid. What could he do? Could he still crack open his box of tricks and cause some dramas? Well, the answer to that, Graham, was yes. Yes, he could. Yeah, it all went a bit Jose, didn't it? Which ultimately resulted in one of the most dramatic ends to a game I think I've ever seen in my life, where the goalkeeper, who'd been chastised for wasting time with Benfica at 3-2, was told to get up the other end and score a goal, which is exactly what he went and did. Which is brilliant.
It was brilliant. Anatoly Trubin, Benfica's Ukrainian goalkeeper. A bullet header. A bullet header. The sort of goal you want to see from a goalkeeper, wasn't it, Terry?
Yeah. The great thing about this is that these days, the tactic for sending goalkeepers up isn't for them to score. It's to just cause chaos amongst the opposition defender in the final seconds of a game. It's not really intended for him to do a Jimmy Glass, you know, and, you know, save the season, which is what this guy did. It's extraordinary. Let's just break this down, right? Because this was the last game standing out of them all.
Yeah.
All the other ones had finished. So Mourinho knew exactly what was required in that moment. And apparently, I mean, I watched the goal show on TNT, so I was watching them all flying in. So I didn't watch that game specifically. But I understand that Benfica were more than worth their win. I mean, like, this was not a fluke. Benfica were the better side. It looked like it was absolutely fantastic. It was pissing with rain. Really good, sort of like, you know, wet Wednesday in Benfica. And Madrid demonstrating that they can't do it on a wet Wednesday night in Benfica. And the fact that it was that late finishing, because there's this aura around Mourinho, there are some commentators suggesting that Mourinho had orchestrated a late restart for the second half so that he would know what was necessary, which, it's always great to attribute 5-dimensional chess to Mourinho. It really is, because he has this aura and this persona that he adopts that makes it easy for people to ascribe those kind of qualities to him. And he plays into it so well. And, you know, it's his old club, and it's Benfica, who have been otherwise fairly average. Just to set the scene, I'm sure listeners know, Benfica were not going to qualify for the playoffs, really. And they'd had a poor Champions League campaign. They've not been tremendously good in the domestic league, but they could just about do it. But even up until the final seconds, you know, Marseille were going through. It was 3-2. The players thought that they should just, like, hang on to their league and defend the league. And it was within those final seconds when there was no one else playing that it's like, get up there and score another goal. And they only bloody did it. Extraordinary. Against, you know, the acknowledged one of the greatest teams in the world and also one of the most successful European teams, if not, well, the most successful European teams. Absolutely amazing. Are you guys aware of the Gutman curse?
I am.
Do you know what the Gutman curse is?
Maybe you should remind the listeners, if there's listeners out there that don't know what it is.
Bela Gutman won 2 European Cups back in the 50s for Benfica. Hungarian coach. Magnificent story, that guy. His book is amazing. There's a book, I can't remember the guy who wrote it, but seek out his biography if you're into that kind of stuff. Really, really fascinating bloke. It is said that he was promised a significant pay rise for winning the second one, for which was not forthcoming. And so Gutmann issued a curse and said that Benfica would never win a European title for 100 years. 100 years. I mean, obviously, you know, the world changes, the football world changes, and Benfica just simply aren't as good as they are. And that's really why they're not winning, you know, the European titles. But they have had close calls and got to finals and lost. I think on one occasion, I think it was Eusebio, did something performative to try and lift the curse. You know, while he was alive, there were attempts to sort of like get Bela Gutmann to forgive the club, and it didn't happen. So it's a wonderful story. But wouldn't it be just amazing if the guy who lifted the Gutmann curse was Mourinho? I mean, like, really, that would make it a legendary season. And I'm certain that one of the reasons why Mourinho is there is not because he thinks he's going to do it, but because, you know, it's the narrative. I will go to Benfica. I will lift the curse.
Well, that is narrative. That is some really good narrative.
Powerful
there.
Narrative.
Almost as good as the narrative of them being drawn against Real in the next round, Jan. So they're playing them three times in a row. This is what the mega table also gives you. Too much or not? I don't know. Because, of course, Real are going to be missing a couple of players for that first leg as well, because they ended up the game with just 9 players on the pitch because they had 2 players sent off in injury time in that game. This game just kept on giving, didn't it?
I mean, that's got to be the one to watch in the playoffs, isn't it? The one to watch twice in the playoffs. So it's the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
There was obviously other stuff that happened on that last night.
Sure, sure, sure.
Arsenal won the table. Do they get the supporter shield now? I'm waiting for it. Surely American fans will be expecting a supporter shield type thing to be awarded to Arsenal, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
No, you're not going to get the supporter shield. That's not. You only played 8 games. Yeah, you can get a supporter shield once you've played an entire... You can get a trophy when you've played an entire season of fixtures. And that, I believe, is called the Premier League trophy, which... It's back on.
Yeah. It's more comfortably on at the moment, anyway.
Point of order, yep. Supporter shield.
Yes.
What is all that about?
It's a weird thing from the world of soccer.
Oh.
The Major League Soccer, to be precise. MLS have this huge long season where they play a regular season, and at the end of it, the team that has done the best, finishes at the top of their mega table, is given what's called the supporter shield. A year or so ago, that was enough for bald FIFA guy to say, this means that Inter Miami, who finished top of this mega table, now deserve to go to the Club World Cup. No other reason other than they won the supporter shield. They then went out in the first round of the playoffs, didn't they, Terry?
Correct.
Yep.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
And so made a complete joke of it, as other teams did far better in the actual main event of MLS, which is the MLS Cup. Which is a series of playoffs that follow the main season.
Closer to home, the Rugby League Super League have a similar arrangement because they also have a postseason. So the champions are the grand final winners, but also there is a league leaders trophy that is given to the team that finishes top of the Super League at the end of the season. And you are, I have to say, Super League, you know,
well,
broad, not entirely certain which part of northern accent.
A Trans-Pennine accent there.
Yeah.
Something born off one of the turtles of the M62. Well, I did see Arsenal win a trophy this weekend, and I hope this one counts. All right, it's a Super Cup, but it was the first ever International Women's Club Super Cup, so... I feel that worked, and I was there and I watched it, so I feel like it actually means something. And I know we spent most of last year poo-pooing the Club World Cup, but I really like the fact that Arsenal became world champions yesterday, so I quite enjoyed it all, really. Yeah, I even saw Gianni Infantino, old bald FIFA guy, was handing out the gongs, wasn't he, yesterday? So I was about 100 yards away from him, I think. So I don't think my terms of my injunction were broken at all. Yeah, so how do we sit on that? It's just a Super Cup, isn't it? It doesn't really count as a trophy, does it?
It depends how it's set up in women's football. Does it have a standing already? I think from what you said, this is the inaugural.
This is the inaugural one. This is the inaugural one. So we played Corinthians, who are the three times winner of the Copa Libertadores. So they've won the last three ones. Arsenal obviously won the Champions League last May. We played Asfar of Morocco on Wednesday at Brentford. I went to see that. Gotham FC were the CONCACAF champions. They were surprisingly knocked out by Corinthians. I'd say surprisingly. Gotham are in the middle of their summer break, whereas Corinthians are just about starting their season. Their season starts in a couple of weeks' time, so a bit more prepared for it. It was a great game last night, though. Ended up 3-2, went to extra time, and yes, Arsenal won 3-2 in the end. So I really enjoyed it. But yes, whether or not it actually counts as anything, they certainly made a lot of money out of it, 1.8 million, which it's more than the women's transfer record. So it would be like the equivalent of winning, what, 150 million quid in a men's tournament, wouldn't it, for playing two games. So yeah, worth winning financially anyway. But yeah, whether or not it actually matters or not is another thing. But of course, this is the precursor for an actual Club World Cup. But seeing as Qatar are the only country that have come forward to host it, I think that's a can that's going to be kicked down the road for a little bit longer as well.
Hmm. Also, Super Cups are great. Yeah, Super Cups are great.
Oh, yeah, Super Cups are great, says the Palace fan over there.
The team that currently holds the Community Shield. Super Cups are great.
Did Sunderland win the Charity Shield in 1973? Do you remember that, Jan?
I don't remember because I wasn't alive, but I don't think so.
I'll just look that up.
There's got to be a way to find out.
Yes, and I'm looking it up now. List of Community Shield leaders. They did weird things in the 70s, though, didn't they?
You mean in football or just in general?
Generally, I think.
It was a weird time. It was a very crazy time.
It's a crazy, crazy time. Yeah, because, Sunderland weren't there. Sunderland didn't compete in the Charity Shield. 73 was Burnley against City.
That's weird.
Burnley were the second division champions at the time.
Okay.
That's a bit strange, isn't it?
Well, this appears to be a rabbit hole, listeners.
So it was the third consecutive edition in which neither the first division winners, Liverpool, nor the champions, Sunderland, chose to compete. Bill Shankly, the Liverpool manager, explained that his preparation was geared towards having his squad ready for the first league match of the season, not the Charity Shield the week before. Well, there you go. So, yeah.
I think, to be fair, though, I was quite happy. Me that didn't exist at the time, that one, I was quite happy just with the FA Cup. So
yeah, and against Shankly's Liverpool as well, there would have been a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, who knows?
We've just beaten the mighty Leeds, Terry.
The mighty dirty Leeds.
These things can happen. The mighty dirty Leeds, yes.
Well, Jan, have a look at the ticker. Have we missed anything while we've been chatting about Super Cups and their value? Because there is something of value going on tonight, and that is obviously the end of the transfer window.
Yes, Dwight McNeil has gone to Crystal Palace from Everton.
This is good news.
Is that a player you've been coveting then, Terry?
I didn't realise that we were in for Dwight McNeil until our mutual friend Rich was telling us about it, who I assume is not working today, and has been doing the old yellow ticker on our WhatsApp group for us. Thanks, Rich. It's another winger, and we don't appear to have enough attackers at the moment. But it would have been nice to have got a centre-back. But yeah, so I think it's an interesting transfer window for Crystal Palace.
Mm, yeah, interesting, because it looks like Mateta's going to be staying, does it now?
Yeah, he's failed his medical at AC Milan. He was all set to go there. So that troublesome knee injury that he's had for the last few weeks, aggravated at Macclesfield, apparently, on the 3G pitch. If that's to be believed, I don't know. Yeah, so he failed his medical. I suppose it's not out of the question that he might go out on loan, because I think he's fit. It's just that they just didn't want to pay a transfer fee and sign into a contract with such a troublesome knee. But anyway, if he stays, and we're bringing in Larsen anyway, by the sounds of things, that's all gone quiet, but I imagine that's probably been done, then I would think that we'll have two pretty powerful number nines, which I think would be good for Palace. And maybe there's an opportunity for Mateta to stay, rehabilitate his knee, and perhaps his reputation, which has taken a bit of a battering at the Palace. He was booed off at the game against, well, he was booed off by a small section of fans at Selhurst Park against Chelsea after having handed in a kind of handed in a transfer request. Yeah, maybe he might start the Conference League games and then maybe sort of like play a more supporting role in the Premier League while he gets his fitness back together again and indeed manages a transition, because I will be imagining that they will sell him. They'll want to get a transfer fee for him in the summertime because he's got a year left afterwards on his contract. So we will be saying goodbye to Mateta. We just won't be saying goodbye to him just yet, unless, of course, in the next 20 minutes that has changed. And by the time you listen to that, he's gone somewhere else, in which case, well, you know, that's what happens when you record. Well, the transfer window is still open.
Jürgen Strandlarsen, is that a done deal, do you know?
As far as I'm aware, yeah, it's been accepted. And the Palace do this, though. Everything gets accepted and then nothing happens. Then no announcement is made or anything like that. When we signed Eddie Nketiah, there was no announcement, really, I think, until after the deadline. But then there was this, they went out and did this little film, a video of him going around South Norwood, where he comes from, sort of like catching up on old friends and stuff like that. I think they have this way of just like not really bothering to announce that a deal's been done. He is, I think, a major signing. And I think that Palace like to do full-on announcements with videos and stuff. So I think no news is good news in this respect. I've got a lot of time for Strandlarsen. I think he's a proper footballer and I think he's a good number nine and I think he's got some improving. I think he's the kind of player that Palace can sign and would be happy to sign. He might struggle a little bit at first because he's not had a great season at Wolves, but he was decent last season. And I remember watching him a little bit when he was in La Liga as well, when I was watching La Liga. So I'm quite pleased about that, I've got to be honest.
Yes.
And adding to that, of course, he brought in Brennan Johnson earlier in the window, who is a fine player, I think. So
yes.
It's quite an exciting attacking lineup.
Yes.
Now that Mateta's hanging around.
And Evan Gueslon as well from Villa, who they wanted to sign Palace in the summer, but Villa usurped them. It didn't work out at Villa, and now he's coming to Palace. So, yeah, we're pretty stacked for attacking players, so we just now have to score some goals.
I think that's really, the way it works. Yeah.
That's what needs to happen next, lads. So hopefully, you know, Oliver Glasner, when he's not too busy getting angry with people, will be able to get that going. I understand the game yesterday, the Forest game, was terrible. I didn't watch it, but I was working, but it was. I understand it was terrible. So they've got some work to do, I think, to turn it around. But yeah, I think that that's a decent transfer window. I don't think too many people can complain. As long as the Strandlarsen thing happens. If it doesn't, then that could be disappointing.
Yeah, I don't think that game yesterday was going to be anything other than terrible, considering the history between those two clubs. But a lot of the games on Sunday, there were some surprise results. City giving up a two-goal lead against Tottenham. That was pretty mad, wasn't it, Jan? But the goal that grabbed the point for Tottenham and denied City 2 points was pretty special, wasn't it, Jan?
Yeah, it really was. And it was good to see Conor Gallagher back. And sadly not at Palace. Solanke's going to get the plaudits for scoring a spectacular scorpion kick, which at first I wasn't quite sure whether he really meant it, but I think looking back, he was just trying to get something on it. I think it was intentional. But Conor Gallagher chased down the ball and robbed City of possession halfway inside of their own half and then just burst onto the wing there and just whipped in a wonderful cross. So all in all, it was a brilliant, brilliant goal from the combination of two great players. So it was a great way to end the weekend, actually. Really enjoyed it.
What was even better was Rodri coming out afterwards and coming out with his own conspiracy theories about referees having it in for City. They don't want to see them win. This is City with 6 league titles at the moment, but obviously referees have it in for them. Terry, does he have a point? Is there a conspiracy against City?
How to answer this with a straight face, Graham? I don't believe there's a conspiracy against any club. I'm perfectly willing to accept that referees make wrong decisions and that referees can be daft, and I've never been particularly kind to the PGMOL. But I mean, I'm not really a big fan of the idea of conspiracies unless it involves my club, in order to make me feel a little bit better about how miserably we do. I know it's not quite the same thing, but think on this. Obviously, the PGMOL have nothing to do with the 115 charges. But, you know, the fact that we still don't know what's going on with those 115 charges so many years later suggests that, if anything, the authorities look upon City with a degree of kindness and understanding. I just don't think that that squares with any kind of notion of conspiracy. I suspect Rodgers was just saying stuff in order to cover his own embarrassment and that of his team. I don't think City are going to win the league this season, and that will be two seasons in a row that they've not won the league, and well, that's kind of embarrassing given the amount of money that's been put together to put that squad together. And yeah, and you know, they're competitive guys and they don't like losing, you know, and that's understandable, but somebody really should have a word with these players. You know, it is, he might conceivably, depending on the exact wording that he used, he might conceivably find himself in bother for that, because joking aside, that's a serious accusation to make.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I mean, it's good for us to have a laugh about it, Jan, but that is actually crossing the line, isn't it, from Rodri there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're effectively accusing officials of somehow favouring the opposition, of somehow trying to create an outcome of the game that you're in, not in your favour, which is just ridiculous. Manchester City is second in the league. And as Terry said, they've got piles and piles of trophies in the massive trophy room that they've got. So, you know, they lost out. They didn't lose. They lost out on points to a really, really motivated and brilliant counter-attacking Tottenham side. And just suck it up, Bonnie lad. You know?
Suck it up, Bonnie lad.
Well,
indeed. I think it's great.
What he actually said was, I know we won too much and people don't want us to win, but the referee has to be neutral. And for me, honestly, it's not fair.
Okay. I mean, yeah, now that is not necessarily an explicit accusation, is it really? There's a strong implication there, isn't it?
He's saying that the referee isn't neutral there. That
yeah,
the
exactly.
referee
yeah,
is
I think
biased.
That's the key part.
Yeah. I mean, referees can, you know, referee in an unneutral manner. I mean, they're human beings and they're governed by emotions and they can be swayed by home crowds. They can be taken in by the atmosphere, particularly inexperienced ones. And more experienced referees, you expect to be more able to deal with those kind of pressures and those kind of emotions better. You know, they're not robots and they can get carried away by what's going on. I mean, football is an amazing game. And if you're right in the middle of it, then yeah, of course you can. It doesn't mean conspiracy. And it is something that has to be taken into account. Sometimes managers and coaches, they work very, very hard to create an environment to encourage the referee to be kind to them and look kindly upon them. That doesn't imply conspiracy, that's just pressure.
I tend to have a little bit more compassion for referees than I think most people do, because you're on your own out there in this massive cauldron, and no matter what you do, some of the people in there are just not going to be happy with you at all. And I think going to the press afterwards and insinuating the referee, saying that the referee is has to be neutral after a game has just finished, is pointing the finger at the guy who has just officiated that game. And I think that that is not on. And I think that, and we've seen what happens with referees when they get called out by Jose, that we talked about earlier, and other players and managers have done it since. And I thought we'd kind of moved away from that, and it doesn't seem like we have. So I think it's a bit distasteful, and I think he should get his knuckles wrapped for that.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think City fans would say, well, he didn't explicitly say it, but he did. If you question a referee's neutrality, then you are explicitly not just saying that he had a bad game or he made a poor decision. You're saying he made a poor decision based on the fact that he wasn't neutral. And I think a ban isn't over the top. The length of the ban might be, but I don't think him being told to cool his heels for three games or so wouldn't be a terrible thing. Because you're right, Jan, in times past, when these things have happened, referees have been singled out because of that. There is a difference between saying a referee had a crap game and made poor decisions and saying that he was absolutely against our club.
This was kind of framed in the way that he was implying conspiracy. And not being neutral is not the same as conspiracy.
Yeah.
But it is not an accusation that should be levelled at a referee. And that's absolutely final, and there's no question about it. He might argue and say, look, English isn't my first language. I should have probably used more nuanced language. And that might well be fair. Were he to say, look, I didn't really mean it like that. I'm really sorry. I was really steamed up. I don't mean that at all. Then, frankly, then maybe that would probably be fine in a situation like that. If City were to double down on this, if this was the beginning of something, then obviously then it's more punishment to add to the 115 charges, and they can sort of like tack it on the end there whenever they finally get around to that. Can we just take a moment to say here that City have been, it has been demonstrated that Manchester City have broken various rules on governance. It is not unreasonable for people to characterise them as cheats. I just think, you know, there's a lack of humility going on sometimes about City that winds you up. Now, all right, this is one guy who's got steamed up. He's come out and he said some things that he probably shouldn't say. So let's just try and put that there in its little place. But really, in the broader context, yeah, there is a reason why a lot of people don't want Manchester City to win, because they're owned by a petrochemical state with a dreadful human rights record, and they've broken various PSR rules to get to where they are. These are reasons for not liking Manchester City, but that doesn't entitle people who play for them to accuse, you know, professional referees who have spent their entire careers, much of their lives, working to be in this position of not being neutral or implying some kind of conspiracy. I think that's poor show.
Yeah, Terry, I'd expect that from you, because like, you're not ready for their disrupting the old system, man. If it was up to you, it would be the same old faces winning year after year. No, City are here just to break that up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're there. They are there to disrupt the football hierarchy. That was the reason why those guys got together and said, why should we buy Man City? Do you know what really irks me? You know what really annoys me is like these big teams winning football matches. Let's like spend hundreds of millions of pounds to build a football club and disrupt that just because that's the right thing to do. They're, in many ways, Graham, they're heroes, and I'm completely wrong about the whole thing.
They really are. They really are. Or maybe Rodri's outburst will soften referees towards him. And they're only going to Anfield next weekend, so I'm sure they'll get plenty of calls going in their favour.
Absolutely. Yeah. Of course, as we know, Anfield notoriously is always difficult for Liverpool players. They always have a terrible time at Anfield. You very rarely, for years now, decades, it's like it's been almost impossible for the home team to win a penalty at Anfield, for example. Dear God. I mean, I don't know how they could contain themselves. I mean, to credit that they all turn up every week to watch and play there, because it's just a massive conspiracy, guys.
Well, yeah, and if we are looking at conspiracies, you might think this is quite a well-timed outburst from Rodri coming as it is 1 week before they go to Anfield.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule out that there's a bit of that about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we saw this with, you know, Ferguson back in the day used to, you know, shout and bully referees. And so, I mean, if he has done that just ahead of that game, then I have to say, chef's kiss. It's beautiful. If he has done that, but I think it's more likely that he was just, as Terry said, he had a head full of steam and he thought he would mouth off. But yeah, it's nice to look at the other side of that, Graham. It could well be that.
Well, Liverpool City is in our box set this weekend, and it comes straight after Brighton Palace. You'll be looking forward to that one, won't you, Terry?
Oh, God, yeah. I can't wait for that. As everyone knows, I love that game. I love that derby game. I think the Brighton Palace derby game is so much fun to watch. I know that obviously almost every game now that's not in Saturday 3 is on the telly, but really, I mean, like the last one was just... I said I wouldn't swear, didn't I, on this podcast? It was just a big pile of poo, guys. It was a big pile of poo emanating from the hole of a dog. It was just awful. I think that's actually better than swearing, isn't it?
I think it is. I think.
It was a steaming, smelly pile of excrement escaping a mangy hound. That's what it was. So I don't have particularly high hopes for this game, to be honest with you.
Yes, yes. Well, that's another reason you should read the box set, listeners, just so you know the matches to avoid as well as the ones to watch. Jan, you'll be covering Man United Tottenham, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes, because I have to cover Tottenham. I'm now the official Sound of Football Tottenham correspondent. But the problem is, one of the reasons, listeners, is that I take them is because it's just a lot of very easy content, because you can just write about how shit Tottenham are. But now they're brilliant again. I mean, that's gonna take some creative writing, style changes.
But so, Man U are brilliant. Look, they've won three games in a row, and Man U fans are now looking at a title run, aren't they?
Well, yes, they're now amazing. And Carrick's clearly the saviour.
Yeah.
Thomas Frank has clearly turned a corner in 45 minutes of football. I mean, you're talking about two heavyweights going, it's like the rumble in the jungle.
Yes.
That's, in fact, I'm writing all this. This content's just flowing out of me now. Oh, it's beautiful.
It's great. I expect 3,000 words to appear. the longest ever box set preview ever is going to come its way. Yes, but if you do want to see if there's any room for the other six games that we're going to put in our box set this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe to our Substack, and it will be in your inbox on Friday. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFerlin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football. Or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Big pile of poo emanating from the hole of a dog.